For the television series, which starts next Wednesday, Nico Davis has worked very closely with the author of The Lost Boys, Andrew Birkin. And one of the themes they've had to explore is the precise origin of Peter Pan and the circumstances which led up to the play's first production in 1904.
Andrew Birkin has the right idea that the thing originally started way, way back before any of us came on the scene, for a long time before, the time when Uncle Jim's own brother died at the age of 13. He never grew up. And I believe that's where the first seed planted itself in Uncle Jim's mind. So many things all the way through his life repeat themselves and repeat themselves and eventually come out. For instance, I'm now leaping ahead, but you get to Mary Rose and the ghosts. So many of his thoughts were on ghosts coming back to look for their lost children as they grow up and so on and so on. I think the very first seed of Peter Pan probably was his brother who died at the age of 13. The actual play will have started at Farnham in Surrey, where Barry and Mrs. Barry had a very nice house with a large lake to which my elder brothers and mother went frequently to stay. Barry, who had this fantastic imagination, used to take the three eldest boys and the huge St. Bernard dog out onto the lake and weave stories and take some wonderful pictures of the boys acting in some overdramatic scene, or when I say overdramatic, there was melodrama in every direction with pirates and I don't know what. And he did in fact write, perhaps is too strong a word, but produce a book called The Boy Castaways, which he had specially printed. There were only two copies printed. And the book consisted of a number of photographs and just the captions to the photographs. From this sprang, in my opinion, Peter Pan. Of the two copies printed, one copy was given to my father, who left it behind in either a train or a hansom cab or whatever it was, so that reduced it to one copy, which was presently sitting in America.
As you were growing up, the youngest of the five boys, what sort of image did you first have of Barry? What kind of man was he, really?
He was an uncle. Heaven knows the amount of time he used to come up when I was having a bath and shave. There's a line or two in Peter Pan comes out in the first act, I think. Yes, if the boy won't take his medicine, he won't be able to see his father shaving. This probably all sprang from Barry coming upstairs to one of us in the bathroom and shaving. And of course, as he shaved, he'd make the most wonderful absurd faces with his tongue well into his cheek and stropping himself, and then the sort of cutthroat razor, which used to wholly delight certainly me and I'm sure all my brothers at the age of 4, 5 and 6, whatever we were. He was of course an extraordinarily good actor, which a lot of people wouldn't realize. He had a passion for charades, and the sort of charades we played were all spoken, but he would settle who was going to play what part. And then it would be left to all of us to make up our own speeches. But he would come in and act himself and would be, in my opinion, fantastically good and funny. He had his own special, very amusing impressions, particularly of Henry Irving in The Bells, which at the right moment you could always get him to do, which had the audience in fits of glee as he overacted gigantically. My chief memory is the time that he had one home in Adelphi Terrace and the other with us in Camden Hill, and he was round half the time with us and half the time in his own flat. But all the time he was with us, he was wonderful fun, the perfect uncle who kept us all in fits of laughter. I wonder if you know a game which we used to call gibbets or hanging, when you take some well-known verse of poetry. The person who's thought of the line reads out the number of letters which have to be guessed, and the person who's guessing loses a life every time he asks for a letter which isn't in, and six lives mean you've lost the game. Way on, I mean, I should think both of us may have been married. Peter and I and Uncle Jim were sitting up in the Adelphi, and by this time we'd become such experts that the person who was sitting the gibbet would invent his own sentence, which had to be guessed. And I've never forgotten one which was taken off some medicine bottle of mine, which Uncle Jim invented, which read, "Lectucarium conquers Qatar, signed Rev, R-E-V, Dr. D-R, Ptarmigan." "Lactucarium conquers Qatar, signed Rev. Dr. Ptarmigan." And Peter and I guessed this with only four lives, which drove Uncle Jim into a frenzy. I don't think anybody could read his plays without seeing that he was a pretty humorous man. I don't see how anybody could invent the pirate's oath, "Split my infinitives." It could be anything except extremely funny man. Of course, nowadays, a captain who plays for laughs 9 times out of 10, and he should never have an inkling of an idea that he's being funny. Of course, he's as funny as hell, but he doesn't know it. He's got to be absolutely straight. He's got to be a gentleman. He's got to be at Eton and Balliol before he jumped off the plank.
But of all the actors, and there are now more than 100 who have played Captain Hook on stage and screen, the one who, in the view of everyone close to Barry, came nearest to perfecting that special quality of Eton and Balliol evil was undoubtedly Sir Gerald du Maurier, himself, of course, the uncle of Nico and the other Davis boys. And the friendship which started for Barry and du Maurier with Peter Pan was to continue across the next 20 years. Du Maurier not only appeared in other Barry plays, including The Admirable Crichton, but also insisted, whenever possible, that Sir James should be around in the stalls, even when Sir Gerald was rehearsing the work of other authors.
When Edgar Wallace wrote The Ringer, produced or directed by Uncle Gerald du Maurier, when they came to the time of the dress rehearsal, Uncle Gerald said to Wallace, "I think it might be a good idea if we ask Jimmy Barry around to have a look at this, because he's a genius on anything to do with the stage drama, and he might have quite a useful idea or two to bolster up any small thing he might think wrong. Shall I ask him round?" So Edgar Wallace said, "Yes, by all means, if you think it's a good idea." So Uncle Jerry rang up Uncle Jim, and Uncle Jim came round to the dress rehearsal and saw it all. And when the curtain came down for the last time, Gerald on one side and Edgar Wallace on the other came and sat next to Uncle Jim in the stalls and said, "Well, what did you think of it?" And Uncle Jim said, "I thought it was absolutely first class and wonderful and so original. And what was really original about it, of course, is the way you let everybody know from the moment, practically the moment the curtain goes up, as to who's done the murder. And yet you maintain the interest throughout. I think that's quite brilliant." Well, of course, this wasn't exactly what Edgar Wallace certainly was hoping to hear. And as far as I know, nobody else ever knew who the murderer was. But it was said by Uncle Jim in complete faith and kindness. He knew, as he told me afterwards, he said, "Well, the moment the curtain went up, I knew that whoever sat in the chair was going to be the murderer. And within 2 minutes, a man came and sat in the chair, so I knew perfectly well who'd done the murder."
Barry doesn't fit neatly into any theory of British playwriting. He lived through a period which also saw Ibsen and Shaw and Galsworthy and indeed Lonsdale and the beginnings of Noel Coward, but none of those writers resemble him. He seems to have stood totally apart from any trend, any school of writing. Do you see any pattern to his work, any resemblance to him and other playwrights?
No, I don't. I agree with you. I think he was quite different. You didn't mention Pinheiro, who was, I should think, about the best known at that time. But there's no resemblance, in my view, to any other writer at all. Except every now and then a play, this is something made me think, you probably know a play called Outward Bound by Sutton Vane. The only reason I mention it is that he thought it was such a wonderful play that he was very annoyed that he hadn't thought of the idea.
And there again, of course, a play about death, about
yes.
mysticism,
yes.
about being beyond the grave.
Yes.
All of them Barry themes.
Yes, that's completely right, and that is why he regretted so much not having thought of it.
And of course, although we've talked about him in terms of a certain amount of despair, certainly in the writing there are the constant themes of death and a certain amount of unhappiness, he was commercially immensely successful. I think he made more money at certain periods of his time than any other contemporary playwright.
I think that's correct. he had no idea how much money he made. His Cynthia asked us to be the person to talk to about that if she were alive, because she was always finding checks in any drawer. He'd no idea what he was being paid. Dear Brutus, Mary Rose, the Admiral Crichton, play after play, they were all successes until the fatal Boy David, when he was too ill to worry.